This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is Cashing Out on this Sunday night. Mark Melusis with you, and we've got a cavalcade of guests coming your way. Nick Whalen will join us in hour number one, and that's more like it. Game two of the NBA Finals, especially if you're an Oklahoma City Thunder fan, or you back to Oklahoma City. In game two of the NBA Finals is an 11-point favorite, knocking off the Indiana Pacers 123-107. Led wire to wire. There were some lead changes throughout the course of the first quarter. Really, the game and the momentum changed when they went in about a 14-2 run when Tyrese Haliburton was sitting on the bench in quarter number two, and when they extended a 21-20 lead and made it a double-digit lead and never really were threatened there. The Indiana Pacers, though, and here's what you have to look at when you look at the NBA playoffs, and you know, the more desperate team is going to go out there and play more desperate. And that's certainly what you saw tonight with Oklahoma City. We can get into the tactics and whether or not the Thunder, obviously, they are the better basketball team, a 68-win team during the course of the regular season. And tonight they had their way with the Indiana Pacers. A couple of things that Oklahoma City's definitely improved on. Number one, you know, SGA, the reigning MVP and the MVP NBA, is going to go out there and do what he does. And he went out there and dropped in 34 points on the night for Oklahoma City. But it was really the secondary and tertiary guys for Oklahoma City in game one that failed their head coach and failed their organization. Jalen Williams was significantly better tonight. The secondary star for Oklahoma City, he finished with 19 points. How about Chet Holmgren with 15 points? They got tremendous contribution from Caruso coming off the bench. Alex, he dropped in 20, and he was 4 of 8 from behind the arc. And from an Indiana perspective, you know, you're going to say, well, we did their job. And they did. I mean, they're going back to game three, back to Gainbridge Fieldhouse back in Indianapolis with this series tied up at a game apiece. I'll give you some look ahead thoughts on game number three. But from Indiana, it's clear. I mean, we'll get to Haliburton in just a second. But when you look at the course of this game, in game one, Indiana was plus 21 from behind the arc, right? In 3-point shooting. Tonight, both teams played even. Indiana turned the basketball over 24 times. The Oklahoma City Thunder were not able to execute, obviously, and turn those turnovers into points up on the scoreboard. They did a significantly better job of that tonight. Oklahoma City got thrashed on the rebounds in game number one. When you look at it tonight, they out-rebounded Indiana. So Oklahoma City tonight did everything that they possibly could to go out there and even up this series in the NBA Finals, and that's exactly what they did in the daylight victory, winning by 16. If you liked Oklahoma City, you're playing the zigzag theory, so to speak, when you're looking at these NBA playoffs or really any playoffs, well, you expected Oklahoma City to respond tonight, and that's exactly what they did. It took a lot of scoring late for it to go over the 228.5. It did. If you liked Oklahoma City, minus the 11, they covered that one easily, winning this game by 16, 123-107. And from an Indiana perspective, and I heard Scott toward the tail end of his show, and I'm not going to come on the airwaves on VSiN tonight and tell you that I think the Indiana Pacers are a better basketball team than Oklahoma City. I do not. But there is something to be said about the magic carpet ride that the Indiana Pacers have been on, you know, and what we have seen here through this NBA playoffs, that it's hard to kind of totally discount what Rick Carlisle's team has been able to accomplish. What they did against Milwaukee, what they did against the Cleveland Cavaliers, and yes, the Cavaliers were banged up in that series, but still, they wore the Cleveland Cavaliers down and won that series pretty easily. What they did against the New York Knicks, the miraculous comeback in game number one, that didn't go the distance. That didn't go 7 games. They eliminated the Knicks in 6 games in the Eastern Conference Finals, and then everybody and their mother thought that this NBA Finals was really going to be a coronation for Mark Dadno and the Oklahoma City Thunder. And what we saw in game one was another miraculous comeback by the Indiana Pacers. And listen, Indiana won the first 2 games on the road against Cleveland. Indiana won the first 2 games on the road against New York. I did not think that the Indiana Pacers were going to win game number two tonight out in Oklahoma City, especially with the fact that the Thunder blew a 15-point lead in game number one. And then you saw the late heroics by Indiana, the 3-point shooting, the Haliburton dagger with 0.3 seconds to go to get them into the series and establish them. But I'm not going to be one on this Sunday night to tell you that I'm going to doubt Indiana or necessarily think that this series is, for all intents and purposes, over. And when you look ahead to game three, I think that's going to be a cakewalk for Oklahoma City. When you look ahead toward game three, and you're looking at the line, depending on which book you're looking at, it's dangling anywhere between Oklahoma City being a 4 to as heavy as a 5-point favorite on Wednesday night. And we'll see exactly when that line or where that line is when this game tips off right around 8:30 on Wednesday night back in Indianapolis. But Oklahoma City is going to get all their respect and all due respect. But I'll tell you this, tonight the Thunder played like this was a game they could not lose. SGA was brilliant. Holmgren was brilliant. Caruso was great off the bench. Wiggins hit about 5 threes during the course of the game. Jalen Williams, the secondary star, was fantastic. They did a better job on the glass, and they knocked down outside shots. They played like they needed to win this basketball game because they did. For Indiana, when you look at the – they're going to go back and look at this basketball game. It could have, would have, should have. It's not exactly like they were – and they turned the basketball over, and they had 15 turnovers, I believe, when you're looking at the box score at the end of the game. They didn't turn it over with the great regular – with great regularity like they did in game number one. But if you're looking at Indiana as this game unfolded and they never really cut it to single digits in the second half, there were shots that the Pacers usually make – that they missed. And then you get to Tyrese Haliburton. And, you know, if you're going to go out and give the flowers to Tyrese Haliburton, and listen, I think he's a wonderful player. And I think the run that he has been on in these NBA playoffs has been unbelievably epic. It really has been historically great. You know, the shot against the Knicks, the shots against the Bucks and the Cleveland Cavaliers, game one of these NBA finals against Oklahoma City. You know, you listen to Richard Jefferson during the course of the broadcast on ABC, and I think he's dead on correct. I mean, Tyrese Haliburton has got to be a lot more aggressive. But we're going to look at Haliburton as being the quote-unquote head of the snake of the Indiana Pacers. He's got to be a lot more aggressive as this series goes along offensively, because you can't finish the game or go into the fourth quarter, and he finished the game tonight with 17 points. You know how many points that Tyrese Haliburton had going into the fourth and final quarter where Indiana was down by double digits, everybody out in Oklahoma City dressed in blue, celebrating. Tyrese Haliburton had 5 points. Five. That's all Tyrese Haliburton had. He scored 12 in the fourth quarter, got a lot more aggressive. I think he sat the final 4.5 minutes of that fourth quarter when Rick Carlisle finally said, you know what, there's not going to be any miraculous comeback tonight on this Sunday night in game two. And it was taken off the court along with many of the starters for the Indiana Pacers. But that was it. And if you're Tyrese Haliburton and you really want to win this NBA championship, and the Pacers are three victories away, as are the Oklahoma City Thunder, Tyrese Haliburton has to be a lot more aggressive offensively. And I get the Thunder and Lu Dort did a tremendous job defensively, but that's got to be the concerning thing when you look at Indiana. And if you're Rick Carlisle, is how can I get my star guard offensively going as this series moves along? And kind of as you play the game of chess, and there are adjustments by each and every team. You saw Mark Dagno going with his big lineup of, you know, Isaiah Hartenstein and Chet Holmgren with great more regularity in game two than he did in game one. That's trying to negate the rebounding advantage that the Indiana Pacers had in game number one, and it worked. For Rick Carlisle here, he's got to look at Haliburton, and for Haliburton, he's got to look at himself in the mirror. If the Indiana Pacers are going to be a true threat in this series and pull off a stunner of stunners and actually win the NBA championship, Tyrese Haliburton has got to be on go offensively from quarter number one. You can't wait to try and be heroic in the fourth quarter when your team is down double digits. You're not getting stopped. The Oklahoma City Thunder are running, and they are, and SGA is getting everything that he possibly wants. They're going to the free throw line. Holmgren's hitting threes. Williams is hitting threes. Wiggins is hitting threes. The Thunder are completely and utterly comfortable. And then you start scoring. That's not going to work for Tyrese Haliburton. And that's the issue when you look at Indiana. But the Thunder tonight, as you would expect, you know, you get the game from Oklahoma City that many expected probably that you were going to get and finish off the in game number one. But what Indiana did in game number one was they made Oklahoma City and the Thunder uncomfortable down the stretch of that game in the fourth quarter, and they didn't react particularly well. Well, tonight, the Thunder were never uncomfortable. Not really one moment. They led after the first quarter. They scored 33 in the second. They scored 34 in the third. They scored 30 in the fourth. Indiana scored 66 points in the second half in game number one. They scored 66 points in the second half of game number two. The issue, though, is Oklahoma City scored 64. And they led by double digits at the half, and they won this game by 16. They were an 11-point favorite going in. They're anywhere between a 4 and a 5-point favorite going into game three back at Gainsbridge Fieldhouse on Wednesday night in Indianapolis. And when you're looking at the series prices here, the Thunder are back to being the healthy minus 560 favorite to win the NBA championship. They are the better basketball team. But I will say this, not always when you look at it, does the better basketball team end up winning the NBA title? I think this series is going to come all the way down to game number four. I would expect Indiana, as desperate as Oklahoma City played tonight, and if you were on the Thunder, as was I, you know what? It was a good Sunday night. But I would expect Indiana to play just as desperate on Wednesday night when they're back home. Want to bet smarter this football season? Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a full year for just $199 plus a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by Josh Applebaum, a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smarter NFL bets. Sign up now and get instant access to a daily email with all the best bets from our hosts and their guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access on the VSiN Watch app, plus our 2025-2026 NFL betting guide dropping July 1st. Don't miss out on this limited-time offer. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe and use promo code BOOK to sign up. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Straight ahead, we'll continue to talk about Game 2 of the NBA Finals. Nick Whalen will join the program. This is Cashing Out. Mark Melusis with you on this Sunday night right here on VSiN.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is Cashing Out on this Sunday night. Mark Melusis with you right here on VSiN. Well, let's hit the progressive guest line right now. We'll welcome aboard Nick Whalen, co-host of Prop Points, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern time right here on VSiN, and a RotoWire senior analyst. Hey, Nick, Mark Melusis with you. Thanks for the time tonight. Certainly appreciate it.
Hey, anytime, man. Anytime. This is my usual Sunday night slot. You know, I was just telling you off air, it's always a great way to wind down the weekend. Yeah. We had a fun game too. Kind of fun, I suppose, especially if you're a Thunder fan, and happy to be here, man.
Yeah, and Nick, you know, I gave my initial thoughts on what we saw in game number two tonight out in Oklahoma City, and you saw the Thunder respond, right? The more desperate team. You know, they were anywhere from, I think the line opened up as a 3.5-point first quarter favorite. I think it closed right around 4.5. Mm-hmm. They covered, won by, you know, we're up 26-20 after the opening quarter. They were an 11-point favorite in the game. They win the game by 16. The total was set at 228.5. That game goes over as well. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were looking for the Thunder to respond in a big-time way, that's exactly what you got tonight after they blow the 15-point lead and lose game one.
Yeah, no question about it. And I think the roadmap for this, you go back to round two against Denver, right, where they blow a late lead. You know, Aaron Gordon hits that crazy three on the wing. Denver ends up stealing a game that certainly felt like it was going to be an OKC victory. And, you know, the Thunder turn around and won game two in that series by, I think, 41 points. This wasn't quite that level of a decimation, but I think there was a reason that we saw that line jump by a point, point and a half relative to game one, because the script is out there, right? OKC, this team that even though they don't have NBA Finals experience, you just trust this team to show up in this spot. And I thought overall this was just a classic OKC win, right? Relentless effort on defense, even though the steal numbers weren't as gaudy as they were in game one. You had multiple role players contributing. Alex Caruso was fantastic. Aaron Wiggins was great. You know, I thought some calls actually went against the Thunder throughout this game, didn't really end up mattering. And obviously Indy, it didn't play well necessarily, ended up with 15 turnovers, but still forced 14 for OKC. And I think if there's something that you could be happy with heading back to Indianapolis for game three, it's that you've played these two games in OKC. You split them, of course. You've accomplished what you set out to do. And, you know, points off turnovers have been basically equal through these first two games. So even though if you're Indiana, yeah, you want to be probably in that 10-11 turnover range instead of 15-25 like we've seen in these first two games, I don't know if that's really possible against OKC. I think 15, you'll live with that the rest of the way if you're Indiana. But the Pacers' effort in transition, you know, limiting the Thunder off of those turnovers, and I think contesting shots at the rim, you know, that's something that's really stood out to me, particularly in game one. They did a great job, but even in game two, I mean, OKC is not shooting the lights out by any means. Like, yeah, you've had some role players step up, but I think Indy is actually playing this team pretty well defensively.
Yeah, and I thought it was important for Oklahoma City tonight to play them even from behind the arc, and that's exactly what they did after right. Indiana was plus 21 from three-point range. You know, when you look at it, I mentioned, you know, if Indiana is going to be a real threat to take down Oklahoma City and pull off a massive upset in this series, Nick, one guy that's got to get going is Tyrese Halliburton. He had 5 points yeah. going into that fourth quarter. That's a credit to the Thunder's defense. I get it. You know, he finished with 17, scored 12 in that fourth quarter. Indiana wasn't getting the necessary stops to pull off any kind of miraculous comeback tonight. Mm-hmm. What about what OKC is doing defensively? And when you look at the prop market for Halliburton here moving forward going into game three?
Yeah, a lot of good points there. And, you know, I think you look at the final line for Tyrese Halliburton, you say, okay, 17 points, 6 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks. You know, you'll live with that in a blowout loss. But like you said, a lot of that is contextual here. I mean, almost all of that production, scoring-wise at least, came in garbage time. And, you know, I thought OKC stuck to its same game plan essentially from game one, right? They didn't overreact. They didn't go back to the double big starting lineup. They kept Kayson Wallace out there. And, you know, forcing the ball out of Tyrese Halliburton's hands. If he's going to bring it up, if he's getting a rebound, they're picking him up, you know, before half court. And Tyrese Halliburton, for as great of a player as he is, he's not built the same way as someone like SGA or someone like Anthony Edwards, who, of course, the Thunder just saw in the West Finals, where those guys are going to force the issue, right? Like, there's just no scenario in which SGA has 5 points going into the fourth quarter of a playoff game. He's not going to let that happen. Whereas Halliburton, by nature, is more passive. So I think if you've watched him throughout this season, throughout his career, it's not surprising, you know, the degree to which he's not involved. But I think you're right. If Indiana has any hope to actually win this series, as opposed to just steal a game and, you know, lose it in five, which to me still feels like we're heading that direction, they need Tyrese Halliburton to play more like he did in the fourth quarter. And a lot of those were difficult shots down the stretch, right? Maybe they're a little bit easier to make when you're down 18 and it doesn't feel like anything is on the line, but he had a really nice fall away three in the corner. You know, he took a couple long pull up threes. Those aren't necessarily the shots you want from Tyrese Halliburton, but you can't be picky against OKC, right? I think if Tyrese Halliburton has a window, I think he has to start capitalizing on that earlier in the game, because, you know, if Pascal Siakam's going to play like he did tonight, 3 of 11 from the field, the rest of these guys, you know, ultimately role players, right? Aaron Nesmith, Miles Turner, Andrew Nembhard, really nice players, but not guys that you can look at and say, hey, we're going to need 25 out of you tonight.
All right, let's look ahead to game three, Wednesday night back in Indianapolis at Gainsbridge Fieldhouse. Are you surprised by the line sitting anywhere where Oklahoma City is a 4.5 to 5 point favorite, Nick?
I am. I really am. And, you know, you can look back earlier in the playoffs, you know, the Thunder were only a 3 point favorite for game three and game four in the Minnesota series, you know, but they were 6.5 point favorites for those two games in the Denver series. I thought, based on what we saw in game one and what we saw tonight, which was, you know, OKC essentially leading 99% of these two games, that this number would come in, I don't know, 6.5, 7, 7.5, that feels reasonable. I think you have to jump on OKC at 5 right now. Certainly if you could find it out there at 4.5, I know it's shorter rest between these two games. I know you're traveling, you know, Indy should play better in theory at home, but I think this is a really, really short number, really surprising to me based on what we've seen so far. You look at the total, you know, it's 228 right now at DraftKings. Game one, of course, went under that at 221. Game two comes in at 230. So I think that total makes sense, but I would lean over on that. You know, I think Indy can play better offensively at home. And honestly, you know, OKC at worst could probably replicate what it did tonight. You know, yeah, you get a great game out of Aaron Wiggins off the bench. That's probably not happening again, but OKC has still not played a great offensive game by any means in this series. I thought they were probably C+, B- on offense in game one, you know, maybe a B+ tonight. Outside of that 19-2 run, it still feels like they're leaving some meat on the bone. I mean, they hit 14 threes tonight, but 9 of those were from Alex Caruso and Aaron Wiggins. The starters went just 4 of 17 from beyond the arc. And yeah, Chet Holmgren was better, but I think Jalen Williams is a guy that you look at and say, okay, he could play better as this series goes along.
We're chatting with Nick Whalen, who does a fantastic job of prop points co-host there Monday through Friday, 2 to 3 Eastern time, right here on VSiN, also a RotoWire senior analyst. Nick, any player props when you're looking at it ahead to game three, when you're looking at that marketplace that either team Pacers or Thunder side you're looking to take advantage of?
Yeah, absolutely. Probably won't lock anything in right away, but I love the NBA prop market. Might only have, I mean, 3 more games left in the season, so we got to take advantage. I just mentioned Jalen Williams. I would look at the over 21.5 points for him. I know he's gone under in each of these first two games, but I really like the looks that he's getting. You know, missed like three or four wide open threes tonight. I think he could have very easily gone over that number in at least one, if not both, of these first two games. So I know you're heading out on the road, but I think that is still a decent number. You know, we just talked about Tyrese Haliburton needing to be more aggressive. I think he realizes that. Certainly, if we're talking about it, the Pacers are. You look at the over 2.5 threes, that's plus money right now at DraftKings, plus 114. He has quietly gone over that in five of his last eight. Would also look at Haliburton over 7.5 assists. This is just kind of on principle. He's had six assists in each of these first two games, despite really feeling like he hasn't been involved whatsoever. You know, Pacers have been hot and cold shooting the ball, but this is a guy who was basically averaging double-digit assists coming into the NBA Finals. I mean, it would have been crazy to see a 7.5 out there in any of the previous rounds. And then the other one I would look at for Indiana, Aaron Nesmith, over 1.5 threes. I know you're laying a lot of juice right now. It's like minus 165 at DraftKings, but I would maybe even look at an alt line, bump that up to 2.5. He's got 7 threes in these first two games. He's taken 15. And you know, you think of Aaron Nesmith as this kind of dog on defense, this role player. This is a really, really good three-point shooter. A guy who shot north of 40% from three this season, a guy who has a pedigree as a shooter. So nothing he's doing to me in these playoffs feels unsustainable.
Nick, do you think the line between these two teams is a reaction to the way that Oklahoma City has played on the road as compared to at home?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Maybe a little bit. It just seems like, you know, going from 11.5 down to 5, you know, that a 6.5 point swing, you know, giving home court to Indiana, to me, that's a little too much. You know, yeah, the Thunder have had their blips, particularly in that Denver series, but it still feels to me like every time OKC loses a game, like something crazy has to happen, right? Like the Aaron Gordon three or the comeback, you know, by the Pacers in game one. And obviously Indiana, we know, is capable of replicating that effort. They've done it, what, four times already in these playoffs. But the room for error is just so large for OKC. Again, they have not really played that well on offense. You know, Jalen Williams kind of scuffling along. You know, starters aren't shooting it well. And they're still leading these first two games, you know, by double digits for the vast majority of the 106 minutes that we've played so far. So look, the books make money for a reason. They know what they're doing. I'm not saying it's totally wrong, but to me, I'm surprised that number came in at 5.
Nick, hang in there. We're going to bring you back. We're going to talk a little Giannis, Milwaukee, and touch upon a little National Football League. We'll do that next. NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Finals are here. ProfitX is offering the best odds all playoffs long, the first of its kind in the U.S. You'll be able to make your sports picks against other groups of fans rather than against sportsbooks. Exchanges guarantee you the best odds on average by 10 to 20%. Even request your own odds. Download ProfitX today with code VSIN and earn up to $200 in profit cash over your first month. This is Cashing Out. Mark Melusis with you right here on VSiN.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is Cashing Out on this Sunday night. Mark Melusis with you right here on VSiN, and we're being joined by Nick Whalen, who does a great job, co-host of Prop Points Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern time on VSiN, also a RotoWire senior analyst. First segment with Nick, we reacted to game two of the NBA Finals that went the Thunder's way, 123 to 107. They covered. The game went over as well. Nick, let's stick with the association. You know, you're in Milwaukee. We want to talk about Giannis and the sweepstakes for Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek freak. Where do you think, ultimately, do you think he gets moved? And where's the marketplace to try and take advantage of a potential destination for Giannis?
Yeah, it's the question of the summer, I think, even more so than anything that's going on with Kevin Durant. And, you know, even in a lot of ways feels like it's kind of hanging over the NBA Finals. It's hanging over the NBA draft. There could be some implications there. You know, Giannis is such a unique player, a unique person, that I still would not be surprised, you know, if he did remain in Milwaukee, or at least did not put enough pressure on the organization to force a trade, because of course Giannis is still under contract next season. He's under contract the year after that. And then he has a player option. So the Milwaukee Bucks, like, the thing we have to remember in all this is that Milwaukee is under no obligation to trade him. However, if you follow the NBA at all over the last 10 or 15 years, you know that really the contract status doesn't matter all that much. And it's really more about getting into that year before you're a free agent when you have maximum leverage. And if Giannis does come to the Bucks and say, look, I would like to be traded. You know, I've done all I can here. I'm realistic about what this roster looks like. Almost always the team ends up caving, whether they want to or not. And if it does end up being the case, I think there's a way in which this works out for both parties, because even sitting here in Milwaukee as a Milwaukee Bucks fan, it's hard for me to see the vision, you know, to be sitting in that meeting, you know, with Bucks management and Giannis. Like, I wonder what is the sell, right? Like, how can you reconfigure this roster to get back to title contention as soon as next season? Because, yeah, Giannis, it always feels like he's young, right? But he's going to be 32 soon. And I don't know if you can just throw away next season. Yeah, you could probably sell him on a 2-year plan where by 26, 27, maybe you're back in title contention. But at that point, who knows what the Eastern Conference is going to look like? You know, you kind of feel like you might have this window next season with Boston, maybe sitting it out, you know, with Jason Tatum's injury. And yeah, the Cavs look vulnerable. And all due respect to the Indiana Pacers, I still think you look at that team and say, you know, we played them tough each of the last 2 years with injuries in the postseason. But look, if I were Giannis, I honestly would be exploring other pastures. And if I were the Milwaukee Bucks, I wouldn't necessarily push back too hard on that. I think you want to keep Giannis first and foremost, but you're going to get a haul, an absolute haul, if you do trade Giannis Antetokounmpo to a team like the San Antonio Spurs or the Houston Rockets or the New York Knicks. That's kind of the latest hot team, or the Houston Rockets. The Knicks to me are really interesting because I think there is a level of desperation there. They just fired their head coach. I think they look at these playoffs as a failure, right or wrong. They feel like they should have beat the Indiana Pacers. And we know this is a team that is reactionary and is not afraid to push all the chips in. And again, if you're Milwaukee and you're trading Giannis when you don't necessarily have to, you would be extracting every possible asset from a trade partner.
No, I would agree. And that's why I think maybe San Antonio, like when you look at, and listen, I grew up a Knicks fan. The idea of Giannis being at Madison Square Garden is very enticing. The issue, though, Nick, is they don't have much to offer. I mean, they really don't when you look at it. I'm not telling you, like, does Milwaukee really want Karl Anthony Towns? They traded 5 first-round draft choices to go get Mikal Bridges. You know, he's under contract for one more year. OG Anunoby just got paid. Jalen Brunson's not going anywhere. Like, the idea of Giannis in New York is better in theory, but then when you look at the reality of the situation, how exactly does that fit?
Well, the thing that the Knicks have is they have the salaries to match, right? And under the new CBA, that might be more important than anything, because I think it's easy to fire up the trade machine and just say, oh, well, we'll trade this guy for this guy. But it's not that simple anymore. And I think the Knicks at least have the dollar figures on their books where you could work that out. And keep in mind, you know, when you have a big name player, one of the 5 best players in the NBA being traded, oftentimes these end up being multi-team deals. So, you know, there's a way to configure this where maybe they're sending, you know, they're sending money back, you know, they're sending at least one big time player out, but maybe Milwaukee's getting picks and another player from another team. So I think you have to view this as a potential, you know, 3 or even 4 team trade. But to answer your question, I think Milwaukee's in a unique situation because they don't necessarily want a treasure trove of picks. They don't necessarily want, you know, a blue chip young player, or at least a developing player, that is, because they don't own their own draft capital, right? There's no incentive right now for the Milwaukee Bucks to tank in the short term. I don't think they control their next first round pick until like 2029 or 2030 at this point. So they're in this unique situation where, yeah, they might have to trade their best player, but they also want to remain competitive. And in a vacuum, you know, trading Giannis for, you know, Karl Anthony Towns and Mikal Bridges, or, you know, Karl Anthony Towns and Josh Hart, plus some other pieces from another team, like, that might not look great, but it would accomplish Milwaukee's goal of at least remaining out of the basement. Because the worst case scenario is you trade your best player, then you're one of the worst teams in the NBA, and you're giving that pick, you know, to, I think it's what, New Orleans or Portland owns a lot of their future draft capital. So I think that's ultimately going to dictate what that package will look like.
Nick, ultimately, do you think Giannis gets moved?
I don't think he does. I don't. I've gone back and forth on this over the last couple of weeks. My party line has been that the Bucks should be more open to this, perhaps, than they are. But I think Giannis is that unique of a guy. I think if he was just about any other superstar that we've seen in recent years, the trade request would have happened already. This discussion would be in a more advanced stage than it is right now. But I think Giannis is loyal to this franchise. I think they can sell him on at least returning to contention within the next year or two. I don't think he's moved this summer. I wouldn't say it's off the table. The problem is, if they don't trade him this summer, we're going to be going through this again next year, assuming the Milwaukee Bucks don't win the NBA Finals, which to me is very unlikely. But as of right now, I think he will be on the Milwaukee Bucks to begin next season.
We're talking to Nick Whalen, Prop Points, RotoWire. Nick doing a fantastic job on this Sunday night, as he does each and every Sunday night and throughout the course of the week right here on VSiN. Nick, want to get your thoughts on a little NFL. Rodgers obviously signing with the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, their win total is sitting at 8.5. We know that Tomlin's great at getting a lot out of a little. I think it's a quarterback upgrade as compared to where they were a year ago with Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. Wilson now with the Giants, Fields with the New York Jets. What's your take on the impact of Rodgers in Pittsburgh, now the quarterback for the Steelers?
I think it's a huge win by default for the Pittsburgh Steelers because there was really, in my eyes, no alternative. You know, I guess you could sell me on, hey, we roll the dice on Kirk Cousins. The other option would be you just roll with Mason Rudolph. You know, you don't even have like a young, like, let's see what we got in this guy type of quarterback on the roster, right? I don't think Will Howard, you know, the rookie out of Ohio State, is that guy. And we've seen Mason Rudolph. We've seen Skylar Thompson, who's on the roster right now. None of those guys are really exciting to me. You know, I think you'd be looking at probably a 7-8 win team at best. And a lot of that is just putting faith in Mike Tomlin. And look, you know, I've watched Aaron Rodgers very closely, of course, for many, many years here in Wisconsin. He's not the same player that he was even 3 years ago. But I think Rodgers was better last season than we give him credit for. 28 touchdowns for an offense that was basically broken for much of the season. You know, mistakes all over the place, a defense that took a huge step back. And obviously his reputation has taken a huge hit as well. But again, when your other option is extremely washed up Kirk Cousins or Mason Rudolph, I think you have to view this as a huge, huge win if you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. Does it make them the best team in the AFC North? Does it push them into real Super Bowl contention? I don't know that it does, but look, if your goal is like it's been for the last decade to try to win 9 or 10 games, to maybe win a wild card game, I think this helps you accomplish that.
Nick, I'm curious, when you're looking at NFL futures and kind of, you know, dealer's choice, you know, whether you're looking at win totals, whether you're looking at, you know, division winners, whether you're looking at Super Bowl odds, as you've done your work, we're only 88 days away from the start of the NFL season. Anything that's jumped out at you that you really like looking at NFL futures?
Yeah, well, for one, to stick with the Steelers, like if there's one thing I would bet right now with Pittsburgh, it would just be to make the playoffs plus 145. I think that's a pretty reasonable price for a team that, you know, even though it feels like half these last 10 years that you go in just thinking, how is this possible? How is this team going to make the playoffs? They just find a way every single year. So if you're giving me that at plus 145, I will take it. You know, one other bet that I've been kind of batting around, despite being from Green Bay, Mark, I've had to go through this so many times on this channel. I'm actually a Jacksonville Jaguars fan. Obviously, there's a lot of good things going on with the Jags right now. I still think the Houston Texans are the best team in the AFC South, and I don't think the Texans should be plus money right now to win that division. Like, we're still wish casting a lot when it comes to this Jaguars team, who has done basically nothing right over the last 4 or 5 years since drafting Trevor Lawrence. I think there are still a ton of holes on this roster. I don't really trust what's going on in Indianapolis. Obviously, Tennessee is in the early stages of a rebuild. They have a rookie quarterback. I'm not even all that high, to be honest, on the Houston Texans, but I think last year was the baseline for that offense. I think CJ Stroud will certainly be better. They've put better weaponry around him. They've invested in that offense. They just brought in Nick Chubb. Texans at plus 115 to win the AFC South, to me, is a really good bet.
Nick, final one for you. NBA Finals quickly here, 20 seconds. Do you think this series ends in 5 with the Thunder winning it?
I got to stick to my guns, man. That was my official play going into the series, Thunder in 5. Certainly did not think they would drop game 1. I thought maybe they would lose 3 or 4 in Indiana, but I got to stick with it. I'll go Thunder in 5.
Nick Whalen, co-host Prop Points, also RotoWire. Hey, Nick, appreciate the time tonight, all right? And thanks for all the great info.
Hey, you bet, man. Anytime.
You got it. This is Cashing Out. Mark Melusis with you right here on Visa.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
And a good Sunday to one and all. Mark Melusis with you for this edition of Cashing Out on this Sunday evening, as we saw game 2 of the NBA Finals go the Oklahoma City Thunder's way, 123-107 over the Indiana Pacers. That series now tied up at a game apiece. The goes over the total of 228.5. Sat at 230, the final. They win the game by 16, and they covered the 11.5 point spread in game number 2 as well. So if you're looking for the Thunder, obviously the class of the NBA during the course of the regular season, the number one seed in the Western Conference, 68 wins during the course of the regular season. Unbelievable when you look at what Oklahoma City is able to accomplish. SGA, the reigning MVP, finished tonight with 34 points. But for the Thunder, they cleaned up a lot when you looked at it. They did a better job on the glass. They did a better job shooting, shot Indiana evenly from behind the three-point mark. The three-point line, I should say. They were a minus 21 in game number one as they blew that 15-point lead. Did a nice job of containing Tyrese Halliburton. You know, he had 17 empty points. He scored 12 in the fourth, but the game was out of reach at that point in time, even for some of these miraculous Indiana Pacers comebacks. So he expected Oklahoma City to respond, and they did. And now the Thunder are going into game number three. Back in Indianapolis, the Pacers go back home. They did their job. Thunder played desperate. Now the Pacers are going to play desperate game three on Wednesday night back at home, and they are a five-point underdog at home as well. The total in the game is sitting at 228. Give you some thoughts on that game coming up in a little bit. But as we were talking, you know, with Nick about a little National Football League and about Aaron Rodgers, and I think it's intriguing when you look at Rodgers finally landing in Pittsburgh. I think it's intriguing that they open up. You know, their season openers against the New York Jets, the team that Rodgers was the quarterback for the last 2 years, one of those years being healthy, one of them obviously lost after he ruptured his Achilles tendon. But I think when you look at the Steelers team, there is a confidence level. When you look at their win total sitting at 8.5, there's a narrative out there that this isn't a significant upgrade at the quarterback position for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I think, to me, that is complete and utter nonsense. I really do. Like, if you're looking at Russell Wilson, who I don't think really has all that much left, I think you're going to see that this year with the New York Giants. And at some point in time during the 2025 regular season, Jackson Dart is going to be the starting quarterback for the New York Giants when Brian Daboll and company feel that he is ready to take advantage of that opportunity. Not a time before, even if the Giants are losing football games, they have their quarterback. Daboll's got his quarterback, the quarterback that he wanted. They moved up in the first round to get him. I don't think Wilson's got all that much left in him. And then you look at Justin Fields, who's never been an accurate quarterback, whether it be in Chicago, whether it be in Pittsburgh. And I know the story's coming out now that Adam Schefter said that the Pittsburgh Steelers maybe preferred to bring back Justin Fields. Well, to an extent, were they willing to go above and beyond? Probably not. They had some belief. They wanted to continue to work with him. They didn't have wholehearted belief, and he ended up signing a two-year deal with the New York Jets and with their new head coach, Aaron Glenn. So that left him in the waiting game. And as this thing was matriculating along, I never got a sense that Aaron Rodgers wanted last year with his 28 touchdown passes in a completely, utterly lost season for the New York Jets. And of the narrative that the Jets decided that they were moving on from Aaron Rodgers and making it public that he wanted to come back to New York and wanted to continue to play quarterback, never got a sense that, you know, that was going to be the way that Aaron Rodgers was going to go out. And that was going to be the last vision that you saw of Aaron Rodgers in the National Football League. And finally, this past week, he signs the one-year deal right around, I believe the number is $13 million to play quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So when you look at it, I think it works. Now, it's interesting when you look at it overall, like the win total sitting at 8.5. Couldn't Aaron Rodgers, and should he stay healthy, revamped offensive line, improved offensive line? They've got DK Metcalf at the wide receiver position. I think a pretty good running back room. Freiermuth at tight end. We know what that defense is, and we know the culture and the standard that is let down or laid down by their head coach, Mike Tomlin. The issue that you have with the Steelers is the division they're in. Like, Cleveland stinks. Like, let's be perfectly honest. Whoever is quarterbacking the Cleveland Browns, it doesn't matter. I mean, it could be Shador Sanders. It could be Joe Flacco. It could be Kenny Pickett. You know, who I don't think is particularly good. I think he was great in Pittsburgh and college, but I don't think he's necessarily a good National Football League quarterback. And I think we've seen that already in Pittsburgh and didn't want the competition and bowed out, went to Philadelphia. Now he's in Cleveland with the Browns. The Browns aren't going anywhere. The issue that the Pittsburgh Steelers have is that they have the Baltimore Ravens, whose win total is sitting at 11.5, and they've got the Cincinnati Bengals, whose win total is sitting at 9.5. And when you look at Cincinnati, even though they've got issues, when you look at it, dealing with, their defense and not being particularly good, it's still Joe Burrow, it's T. Higgins, it's Jamar Chase. And, you know, when that offense gets cooking, the issue with the Cincinnati Bengals is this, is the fact is are they going to get off to a good start in 2025? Or are they going to dig themselves into an 0-2 hole? I think the way to look at it, I think Nick hit upon it at the end of that conversation we were having in the last segment when we were talking a little National Football League is this. I don't think you can overexpose yourself when looking at the Steelers. And what I mean by that is I would never bet the Steelers to go win the AFC North. I would also never bet the Steelers to go out there and win the Super Bowl. But the idea of the Pittsburgh Steelers now with Rodgers at quarterback, who's going to be motivated, who's got something to prove, with a very good defense, going from a coaching staff that couldn't coach themselves out of a paper bag, now to Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers, the idea that Aaron Rodgers can help this team get to the postseason in 2025, I think he's faulty. I think he can. You know, I think you'll be left at one point in time disappointed if you think this is going to crash and burn. Whatever you think about Rodgers personally, he's one of the greatest quarterbacks, most physically gifted quarterbacks, even at 41, that the National Football League has ever seen. So I think he's going to have a vast impact on the Steelers offensively. As long as he stays healthy, if that Steelers offensive line is good enough and they're able to protect him, he doesn't have the elusiveness. I would take the Steelers over the 8.5, and I would also take the Pittsburgh Steelers to go out there and make the playoffs in 2025 in the AFC as well. I think it's highly possible that you could have three teams out of that AFC North. Obviously, Lamar and the Ravens, they are the standard in the AFC North. If the Cincinnati Bengals can overcome or not dig themselves into an early season hole and be down, you know, lose their first two games like they've done, basically, that has become the standard in Cincinnati. I think the Bengals are a playoff team as well because I love Joe Burrow. Who doesn't? You've got Jamar Chase. You've got T. Higgins. You've got an unbelievable offense. If their defense can be just a tad better and not be the doormat that they were in 2024, I think the Cincinnati Bengals could be a playoff team in the AFC as well. So I think it's great for the National Football League, in essence, you know, that Rodgers is back. I really do. I like watching the drama. I like watching them when people get perturbed that Rodgers is back in the National Football League. I do. I love people getting over emotional and getting, you know, kind of irate. And I get he can rub a lot of people the wrong way. I put all that aside. I look at the player. I think the player can go out there and help the Steelers make the playoffs. And I think it's a vast improvement from what you saw at the quarterback position in 2024. When you're looking at some NFL futures in the AFC, I think the intriguing team to me in the AFC, it's not the Bills or it's not the Ravens. It's not Mahomes who's telling everybody that they're going to air it out more. It's not Harbaugh and the Chargers or Peyton and the Denver Broncos. I think the most intriguing team to me in terms of winning the AFC, because we've seen it before, would be the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, as you're getting plus 950 right now on Cincinnati, their defense a year ago was an absolute sieve. They changed their defensive coordinator. They addressed the defense in free agency in the NFL draft. And you do know this, Joe Burrow doesn't fear anybody. You know, and that's the thing that you love about Burrow. He doesn't fear going up against Lamar. He doesn't fear going up against Mahomes. He doesn't fear anything. And they've got the playmakers at the wide receiver position to strike fear in opposing defensive coordinators. To me, that's the most intriguing team when you're looking at it. I got to see better from that offensive line when you're looking at Houston. I think the Steelers can make the playoffs. I don't think they can win the AFC. You know, the Chargers, I think, are – I love Harbaugh out there in Los Angeles. There's no question about it. I get a little bit concerned about the Chargers defensively in 2025 with some of the losses they have coming off their team from 2024. And it's really not sexy, or you're not grabbing any headlines if you're going to talk about the Buffalo Bills, who obviously at some point in time, one of these years, is going to be their year to win the AFC. And it might be in 2025, but if you're looking to go against the curve a little bit, I would look none other than Cincinnati and Mr. Joe Burrow and the Bengals. Hey, VSiN fans, how would you like to play Circa Survivor or Circa Million contest for free this season? Winner's Circa Proxy is giving away one free $1,000 entry to each contest plus full proxy service. And get this, you'll be paired with a VSiN host for strategy all season long. Enter now for your chance to win. Just visit winnerscircleproxy.com/VSiN. That's winnerscircleproxy.com/VSIN. This is Cashing Out on this Sunday night. Mark Melusis with you. Game two of the NBA Finals in the book. That goes to the Oklahoma City decisively over the Indiana Pacers, 123-107. That series now tied up at a game apiece. We'll look ahead to game three of the Stanley Cup Finals tomorrow night down in Sunrise, Florida. All the baseball. Dave Sharapan from Bostonian versus the Book joins the program next. It's Cashing Out right here on VSiN.